Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latar Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latarrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latarrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And in the studio / conference room with me right now is Miss Denise. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning. Hello, everyone.
Today we are going to talk a little bit about grief. It's a kind of a topic that's near and dear to me right now because I'm not sure if I'm doing it right. One of my sisters, my eldest sister, passed away a few weeks ago, and I found myself actually not feeling. It was very odd. I mean, I remember when I heard that she was ill and in the hospital, I was concerned. And then, like, within a day, it's like, yeah, she's got cancer and it's spread all over the place. And, you know, she's probably not going to even be able to go home. And, like, within 7 days, literally, she went to the hospital on Sunday and passed away the following Saturday. And I think when I heard the diagnosis, I just kind of shut down. Or something. I don't know. I really don't know. I have talked to some people about it, and I've been told, and I'm trusting in it, that there's probably a reason why, and more will be revealed, as we say. So for right now, I'm just sitting with being okay with not understanding it. Mm-hmm. You know, I know Denise, you've experience some pretty huge loss in your life starting at a very young age. So You should be an expert at grief by now.
I feel like I've definitely had some experiences with it. Yeah. And it's looked different over time. And so, yeah. And I've started to get a better understanding of what that's been like, processing and grieving and things like that as the loss has happened. And I think that there's been a distinct difference for me that I've noticed throughout my life from when my father first passed when I was 7 years old and it was very sudden and he was only 29 to like grandparents passing when I was a teenager. And the difference that I've noticed is that when something happens and it's super sudden, it's a bit harder to take in and grasp and process through. And for instance, when my grandfather died and we had known for years that he'd been sick. I mean, yes, that it was really sad and everything like that, but I had had a lot of time to prepare for what those feelings and those thoughts and things like that. So it was sad, but it was easier. Like I was in a different place in my mind and in my feelings with that loss. And then jumping forward to as I've been in recovery, I lost my son-in-law and he was very young. I think he was 29 to 31. So he was really young, and that meant that my granddaughter, you know, was growing up without a dad, and it was very sudden, and that one was really hard. I remember crying off and on for like 4 days. It didn't matter where I was. It was kind of uncontrollably. I was just so sad. Where that was a huge loss in all of our lives, the takeaway was getting to know myself a little bit better and what it would look like moving forward in recovery, having those emotions and what everything all looks like and like understanding, you know, if I have a close loss, I might need like a week off from work or something, you know, and to just be kind to myself and allow that because it is a process. And then moving through that initially will work out better in the long run for me is what I've noticed. And it also kind of matters what's going on in my life at the time. And I'm sure for others as to what things can look like. I was doing a little research for the RPV training that we're doing this evening, and it talked about compassion fatigue, and I was looking at secondary trauma and different things like that. And, you know, it just kind of depends on what's going on in your life, too. Right. And I think that one really big key thing to any of my life stuff that are hard things is just having community and people that I can reach out to and talk to.
Right, sure.
Helps a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I did not have, I mean, other than, you know, initially my wife, who was with me and in on what was going on. And, you know, she's had a relationship with my sisters for 44 this year. Yeah. Anyway, so she processes things, you know, far differently than I do. Not that that's bad or anything, but, it, you know, she's just different with it. And, you know, it took me a while to realize that I should reach out. Well, it took me for a while, kind of a while to realize where I was with it. Because you go into, when someone's sick or hurt, I tend to go into the help mode. What can I do? How can, you know, can I fix this? Can I, what can I do to make things better? And I lock into that and kind of push emotion out of the way. It's kind of a thing that I learned when I was, you know, doing firefighting and first aid and stuff like that. And I've been around some really gnarly crashes. And if somebody is laying there and bleeding, if you freak out, they're going to freak out. So you kind of stuff that emotion back and deal with what you got to deal with. I can remember one where there was several fatalities, and we did what we had to do. And when we got done, we put all our equipment back on the truck. And as soon as all that stuff was put away and we were done, I just ended up throwing up.
Right.
Because the emotion caught up with me at that point. Mm-hmm. So reacting to situations like that. So initially when I found out my sister was sick, I'm like, what can I do? How can I help? Should I jump on an airplane? Should I not jump on an airplane? Is that going to make things better, worse, whatever? Mm-hmm. And then she passed so quickly after that. I mean, I had just barely made the decision not to go down, partially because I was able to talk to her a little bit in some of her lucid moments. And she's like, no, don't come down. So I just took her word for it. You know, this is her gig. She's going through what she's going through. I'm going to respect what she has to say. And then, like, boom, the next day, it's like, it's done. I don't know if I just never came out of that, I got a help mode, or exactly what happened or is happening.
Right.
But I'm okay with the fact that, who knows, you know, in 6 months or something, I might just go into, you know, the, maybe I'm in that denial stage of grief, or, you know, maybe I'm heading for the anger stage. I mean, there's all those different stages they talk about. And those stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then eventually acceptance, or at least that's what Mr. Google has to say. And there's some debate if there's 5 or 7, but I mean, those cover the basics. I don't think I'm in denial. Maybe I am, but I'm pretty clear that she's gone and that has happened and I won't ever be seeing her again or, you know, hugging her or whatever. So that's going to happen. Anger? No, it's really hard for me to get angry anymore. My anger usually shows up just as frustration. And I'm able to deal with that in a fairly healthy way. I don't, you know, go hit a punching bag or something. But, I just kind of reconcile with what's going on and decide whether I really have a place in the argument. I usually don't, which keeps me from murdering random people on the street.
Right.
You know, that guy that cuts you off in traffic and all that
stuff.
I feel
like I'm too middle-aged and too tired to get upset about very much. I mean, it's not that it doesn't happen, but it's certainly a lot less.
Yeah.
My body's like, do we really have energy for that?
Yeah,
we just worked 40 hours a week. Probably not.
Yeah. Let me save that energy for doing something helpful for somebody else.
And,
yeah.
You know, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
something helpful. Boy,
so
that's
not a lot of fight left, honestly. It's I'm working on myself, man. I can't take on worrying about judging you or whatever. I'm good.
I'm good. There you go. So anyway, I mean, you know, it's the sort of thing where it's confusing, but, you know, it can present itself in many different ways. We were talking before the show about a mutual friend of ours who, is being very public about grieving on the internet, and it's causing some grief and confusion for that person. You know, it's like it's their decision whether they want to talk about it or not in that venue. And I think some people can handle it and some people can't. You were sharing on
that, you thought. I think that one of the things most of my friends do is they share about all sorts of different things going on in their life. And I think that that ability to be able to be real and vulnerable with the different circumstances and things that just are happening is totally good with me. I want to be able to feel like if I need to share stuff that I can, and I've definitely gotten better with that in my life. And it's just life stuff. It's life stuff, and I can relate to loss of a loved one and loss of dreams and a job and just all sorts of things, marriage. There's a lot of things that can be lost, and I guess I didn't understand that until probably like 8-ish years ago, and then my friend was sharing with me about how you can have loss and go through a grieving process of all these different kinds of things. You know, I feel sometimes like I've gone through some grieving about how my body has changed, and I've had have surgery last year, and just these different kinds of things. And I want to be able to do the things that my friends do at the gym, but I can't. I can't load up a squat rack and squat anymore. It's not saying that I'm giving up on doing that at some point in the future, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So I have to adjust on the way that I do stuff. I can hold something in front of me and I can squat. So it's just those kinds of things. There can be a lot of different kinds of things that can cause you to have these kinds of feelings. You know, when you were reading off about shock and disbelief, I think with the death of a loved one or a friend, like I've experienced both sides of that. And like shock and disbelief can definitely come for me when it was a sudden thing that I didn't know about. If it was something like someone's been sick for, you know, months or years or whatever, then there's a lot of being where we are with that instead of just being like getting that phone call. Because I've had those phone calls where it's literally like, I just found grandpa, he's been electrocuted, he's not alive anymore. You know, those kinds of things are like very powerfully like shocking, you know, kind of a thing. And so I think it just kind of depends, like I said before, like with the situation and stuff. I also think that it's been harder for me with family that lives back east. I'm from the coast originally, and there's some family members that I haven't gotten to see in a long time. And so when my uncle passed about a year ago, that was a little different. It was hard. I mean, I cried and I was sad and everything like that, but I didn't get to see him or talk to him. And he hadn't been in my life, like, physically for a really long time. Same thing when my sister-in-law died. I hadn't seen her for probably 15 years, and that was kind of hard, too. Because, you know, I didn't fly back there to, like, go to a funeral or a celebration of life or anything like that. So it was a little different. The ones where we've been able to grieve together and or do, you know, like, some kind of a memorial or celebration of life or funeral, that's for the people that are still alive. That's for us to support each other and cry together and whatever that looks like, you know. Mm-hmm. The most recent one was a loss of some friends. I know a couple people in the family, and they lost a young boy to a tragic accident, and that was very, very emotional. I don't know if I've ever been to a funeral of a child, and that was pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's about all I can say about that. That was, and it's still really hard, you know. Yeah. For me, and I'm just a friend, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, I think, you know, you were talking about the idea of grief is not just the loss of another human being. In AA, we talk about grief for the alcohol that we're eliminating from our lives.
Right.
I mean, for most of us, it was, you know, it was that higher power that we talk about for a long time. And alcohol was the cure for everything that ails you, from, you know, relationships issues to celebrations. I mean, it was part of every part of your life. And suddenly it's gone, it's out. And you know, I can honestly believe you go through those stages, you know, of disbelief, anger. Hardly know a single person who has gone through recovery who hasn't suffered a bit of depression along the way.
Right.
And in time, you do get to that place of acceptance. You know, and that's on top of the physical addiction that you get from drugs, where you've got way too many receptors and not enough dopamine coming in to make them happy.
Right.
So they're trying to make you drink. Then you get depressed, and then you want to drink. And again, I think it applies to all substances. Mm-hmm. You know, what was your experience removing substances?
I wanted recovery, so I was excited to, and I had no idea what that would look like. And I wanted that. But I will say that there were some adjustments. I mean, that was a lot of change. You know, so the loss and the grief fell under like the change of then not having that anymore. And then what does it look like to move forward? And that causes a handful of different kinds of emotions. I mean, what did it look like to have fun again?
Right. Would I ever have fun again?
Right. I mean, like, I'm serious. I was like, is anything going to be fun anymore? Who am I going to hang out with?
Right.
All my friends were addicts at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just really weird. How am I going to do all these things? So that was really an adjustment to change. And there's definitely some grief in that process. Even at the same time, which I very, very much wanted to be clean and off of these substances and in recovery and have a better life and all the things. So, I mean, that hope is what kept me going. But there were still moments of all of that. And I'm pretty sure there were some moments of missing it, too. It's been a long time. It's been like 11 years. But I'm pretty sure there were moments early on of, like, missing the upsides of that kind of stuff. I had been in my addiction for about 12 years. And so by that time, there were a lot of downsides of it,
mm-hmm.
you know. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, and when you think about the fact that we eliminate a substance from our life, one of the side effects, good or bad, depending on how you look at it, is you're no longer numbing those emotions or feelings out. And when they happen, they can be earth-shattering. When I was still drinking when both my mother, as a matter of fact, the worst part of my drinking started when my mother got sick and she passed away. And that was through the next 4 or 5 years till my father passed away. And it was shortly after that I stopped. But the grieving process was different then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was almost, how would you say it?
Was it almost kind of choppy?
Not choppy. It was was almost amplified.
Mm, okay.
You know, it was like out of proportion
for
what was going on, the way I felt about it. And how I came to that conclusion, you know, after the fact was... my uncle, who I was really close to, got sick and ended up passing away. And I had to go down to Arizona to give the eulogy. And my emotions for that were more of what I think should have been right-sized. They were strong. There was some crying. There was, you know, some anger about it. It was different. It was different. I think in a way it was deeper. It was not quite so superficial, or as I would call it, this is all about me. You know, I'm losing my mom. Oh, I'm going to miss her. You know, me, all me things. Mm-hmm. Where with my uncle, it was like, gee, you know, his wife is going to have to carry on. I feel bad for the family he had established down there in Arizona. In his church community and all that. I mean, the funeral was very well attended. So it was just I had a very different perspective mm-hmm. on what the grief was. But you were saying, you know, it can be affected by outside forces like my alcoholism mm-hmm. and, you know, your substance use disorder. And then there's normal people. How in the world do they deal with it, right? I suppose it wouldn't be a bad idea to look to them and see how they deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking with one of my other sisters who had always, it was like every day their daily thing was her and the sister that passed away would get on the phone and talk, kind of review the day, what's going on, chit-chat about this or that. And I talked to the living sister the other day, and I asked her how she was doing, and she goes, well, I'm really just kind of adjusting, you know. My whole day is different now. You know, it's not starting out with coffee and a chat with sister.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out. And I said, well, you can call me up. Mm-hmm. I don't have a whole lot to say, but and it's definitely not going to be a girl chat. And they had a different relationship because, you know, I'm the youngest of four. And those two sisters were 14 and 12 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So they grew up in a whole different
environment. Yeah, you were a baby when they were teenagers. Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, they grew up in a whole different kind of environment and house. Like my parents weren't in the depths of the disease when they were there, like they were when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. Me and my next eldest sister got to enjoy that.
Fun.
Part of their lives. Yeah. So it affects and I think pops up in so many different circumstances, mm-hmm. so many different situations, like ruining your whole day because now you got to figure out what to do for that hour you spent on the mm-hmm. phone.
Yeah.
It's like the pool closed out here at Martin Wellness Center. Mm-hmm. That was how I started my day to deal mm-hmm. with my spine problems, and it closed up, and all of a sudden, like, I have an hour and 45 minutes of my day back available again, and as of yet, I have not found a super useful way to use it. I suppose I'm grieving that a little bit and medicating by watching television for that time, which I guess is okay, but it's not very productive.
Mm-hmm. That was something to look forward to in the morning. Got you up and going and to somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right, exactly.
So when you were sharing, I was remembering about like loss of relationships. So this could be, you know, loss of a good friend as far as even just, not even just that they died, just that you're not friends with them anymore. Or loss of a spouse, like, you know, divorce, or loss of a boyfriend or girlfriend, as in like you break up. And I think, so if we look at that, whether it's a friend or a boyfriend or girlfriend or spouse or something, there's this typically everyday interaction that happens in these relationships, mm-hmm. even if you're not living together, where you're talking and interacting and sharing about life and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, if that person's not there anymore, like, who is then that person that you talk to and stuff? There's going to be so many different kinds of things that you share together that just aren't there anymore. And that is also, you know, loss and grief and change. And just like you were sharing with your sisters, mm-hmm. your sister's like, this was also my sister, but also my friend that I talk to all the time. And then mm-hmm. that part of my life's not there anymore. And I'm sure that was an integral part of both of their lives, being able to have those conversations ongoing with someone.
Yeah.
So that ongoing being connected to someone and then having that fractured and change.
Right.
That can be a really big deal to people. And that can cause depression and all sorts of different kinds of things that can happen while you're grieving the loss of that person in your life, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes things end bad and sometimes they just end, you know? So there's variations of like being confused, angry, or whatever that looks like, you know?
Well, I can remember back in my misspent youth, well, teenage years, I can think of like three or four people that I went to school with who through relationship, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend breakups mm-hmm. ended up either taking their life or trying to take their life over it.
Yep.
So that must be just a massive emotion mm-hmm. that it didn't seem to affect me that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there were, you know, many situations like that. And, it's really unfortunate. You wouldn't think somebody could be affected, you know, that strongly. But then again, we're talking about raging hormones and all sorts of different mm-hmm. things going on in your head, you know, with a totally undercooked human being.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of different variations of what that could look like. I think that there was one pretty memorable that I knew of, and that was like an ex-boyfriend's brother going out in front of the girl's house and taking his life.
Wow.
I won't get into any more details than that. But, you know, there's a lot of varying things of people's pain and loss of hope and mm-hmm. deciding to take their lives. And yeah, and then being the person left here sorting through all of that I couldn't even imagine, is of course extremely traumatizing, you know, and different for each person individually. But yeah, those relationship things. And I guess, you know, part of the reason of like talking about these kinds of things is, you know, so that we can understand ourselves better and be kinder to ourselves, get the support that we need and understand that we're human. Mm-hmm. It's going to look different for each of us. I mean, I, when you said like looking to other people for like what it looks like, which has been really cool in my recovery. I've got some good friends who have not struggled with substances. They do struggle with things because, you know, mm-hmm. everyone struggles with stuff, but they're different. And so watching them as they interact in their life and how they go about being kind to others, how they go about being in situations that are hard and just how they live has just been life-changing, because now I've had over this 11 years these different examples of people and mentors and friends, and I get to decide and sort out like, yes, this is definitely me. I'm picking up this. This is a great way to walk alongside of someone if they're going through something hard. And a lot of that is because those people walked alongside of me when I was really struggling with hard things. Mm-hmm. They were like, okay, we're going to start a meal train. You guys allergic to anything? How many people are going to be there? I'm like, okay. And yeah. Then who would have guessed how special it was? And I wouldn't have known until experiencing it, how special it was for people to make food and drop it off for you. Sometimes I would get card and flowers and hugs and different kinds of things, but there was something much more special about eating that food with their kindness along with it. And now I'm able to do that for other people because I understand it's more than just a meal. And when you're in the midst of like, who knows what, and for me, it was like crisis. It really did help. Sometimes I'd be crying just like, oh, you know,
right.
Cause it was just awesome. It was nice to be seen and not all alone.
Right. Right. And it's not difficult for me to grasp the idea that you're not just eating food, you're eating the love that it was made with.
Yeah,
you know, cares. The caring. Our society, you know, is not the greatest when it comes to compassion or empathy. And it really, it frightens me that the children now are locked into their phones and they're not getting a realistic view of what life is like, mm-hmm. and what real interpersonal relationships. They're good. Not getting that combination of our electrical fields connecting when we give someone a hug. Mm-hmm. They're not getting a lot of that because, you know, they're tied into
They're not getting that oxytocin dump from a 20-second or longer hug.
Right, right.
I mean, that's like a real legit thing, you know?
Right. They're getting their reward from likes on Facebook or right. TikTok or whatever. That's kind of why I think that it's kind of poisonous to a certain extent. Of course, listening to podcasts like this, now that's okay.
I mean, that's just great. You know?
Because you can actually learn something here.
I remember when I was a teenager, we had some neighbors who, when we moved in, came over, introduced themselves, and brought us something. You know what I mean? I haven't had that happen in a long time, and I'm guilty of not doing that. Like, I'll say hi to people and stuff like that. But there used to be, like, Welcome wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you experienced that as you were growing up. But yeah. It started to pitter off for my generation, you know, and being able to see that when I was growing up. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and believe it or not, we've gotten several new neighbors. You know, living in Moscow, people are passing through all the time, yeah. But we always go over with a little basket of goodies and, you know, give them our phone number and, you know, invite them to come over and do things if we have a little to do or whatever. And, you know, even if they don't, you know, show up, it's like, okay, well, you know, we're here.
Right.
And you got our number. So if the party gets too loud, call us before you call the cops. Mm-hmm. And we used to do that when I lived with four other guys in kind of an animal house down in California. The first thing we did was, you know, went out to all our neighbors, introduced ourselves, and told them that, you know, you might hear some parties because we're that age, and, you know, give us a call and we'll, you know, make adjustments. Of course, we didn't realize that the police would be getting calls from a block away, but, you know, that's kind of the way things were back then. Mm-hmm. But it turns out if you actually just turn the stereo down, the cops won't come back.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing now is if I have any neighbors immediately moving in or right around me, I'm going to have to go introduce myself and see if I have something to take over there.
Yeah.
Now that I've said it out loud on the air.
Right. Now that you've said it, you must comply.
I'll have to follow through if it happens. Yeah.
And back to the idea of grief, you know, even losing neighbor, you know, just loss in general,
right.
I think can qualify you for dealing with grief on one level or another. And I, you know, the really sad part about it all is I don't know if there's a way to train yourself to be ready for grief. I mean, when somebody is ill with my mother was diagnosed with cancer in like September, and she didn't pass away until December. So there was time to prepare and realize. And I remember being really sad and crying, just finding out what her, you know, diagnosis was and the reality of, I mean, when you hear the C word, you know, the cancer, it conjures up the fatality of the disease. And of course that was 30 something years ago. So, you know, things certainly have changed. They've come a long way. I have a friend whose wife has survived 3 different cancers by the grace of God and medical science. Even then, even when you have time to prepare and look for it, there's no guide, there's no training on how to, you know, be ready for grief other than you may experience these things. And if you're confused, you should reach out. It's not like learning how to drive a car where you get in and you experience it for a while. You know, you crash into a garbage can or two, and eventually you figure it out and you're able to, you know, go ahead and do it on your own, but not so much with grief.
It makes me, you know, you're just making me think of how my daughter's going to be doing driver's ed soon.
Pull the garbage cans off the curb.
Right. Yeah. I'm hoping all she ever would hit would be a garbage can. Anyways, I think, honestly, it's been like just kind of learning as I go along with the different experiences that I have as to like what that looks like and how I can support myself best going through it. I think I'm just kind of, I think it would be called experiential kind of a situation where, because that started when I was so young and it was, you know, so close to home with it being my dad, I started to become more aware of like, okay, how do we do this? Cause this is real stuff right here. And so I think maybe I've been thinking about that a lot throughout my life. And I don't know, I think overall for me, the best thing that I can do for myself is the things that I've learned in recovery, which is super beneficial. And that is filling my week with the things that help support me and my family best. And then in that and having community and stuff like that. And then in that, there's the people that I can reach out to that help me and people that I can sit with and call and be like, hey, like this just happened. Can we meet up or can you stop over or something like that? That ability, I think, to be able to ask for help has been beneficial for me. And I haven't always done that in my life.
No.
Which leads to that isolation and things like that. It really helps a lot when you have a couple of healthy, safe friends, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's not to say that my healthy, safe friends don't have like really hard things at times going on.
Sure.
But again, that's that modeling it of like how they deal with it that's so helpful for me.
Yeah. I understand and agree with you. The key in any situation, whether it's loss or confusion or depression or even anger at a situation, person, place, institution, whatever, the key is to reach out. Because if you do reach out, there's a possibility that you're going to bump into somebody who has had experience with that and has come through the other side and can at least, you know, counsel you on what you might expect, good or bad.
Yeah. But there's no quote.
In AA, we have a thing. It says, you know, in the big book, it says, we will not want to forget the past or close the door on it because our experience may be useful or helpful to somebody coming along behind us. Even, you know, in our ninth step, when we make amends for, past transgressions, we have to look at those things we did.
Right.
And hopefully, you know, down the road, somebody will be, oh, I don't know how to make this amends. I did this thing. Funny you should mention that.
I've had some experience in that over this 30 years. I can probably walk alongside of you in that. Let's talk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I think what I'm hearing you say is like, there's not like this manual for like a standard every single time someone passes what it's going to look like. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. What it's going to feel like.
Right. Because it's been a different for you each time.
Right. Yeah. It has. Yeah. It has. You know, and again,
that is a good point.
You know, different situation, different consequences. You know, my mom passed away in a hospital. My dad passed away in my living room. I was just getting into my super excessive drinking when my mom got sick. I was a blackout drunk when my dad got sick and came home to die. Yeah, and now I'm sober 30 years and my sister passes. You know, I was sober probably 2 years when my uncle passed. So yeah, it's been, you know, way different parts of my journey and my growth. I think when my grandfather passed away, also, like you were talking about your grand, you know, sitting in his chair, went out, mowed the lawn, came in, got a glass of water, drank it, sat down in his easy chair, and that was it.
Didn't wake up. Yep.
I remember, you know, even though I wasn't real close to him because I grew up 2,000 miles away from my grandparents, you know, feeling really sad about that. So yeah, it's been different every time. I expect it will be. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's just a signal of growth and dealing with things on a more healthy basis, you know, because I'm not fully cooked yet. You know, I can recognize that. I can say I still have some room to grow.
Me too.
And thank God for that.
Yeah, this would be this. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. For both of us. All of us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
We need to keep going on the journey or we just might get a little boring, honestly.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it has proven to be like, anything but boring.
I have arrived. I'm here. It just doesn't really seem like that's going to happen. Yeah. Not in this life.
Yeah. That's every time I say in meetings, every time I think I've got it figured out, you know, reality slaps me in the face and shows me something completely new and different.
It's because
uncomfortable.
It's because we're traveling different mountains all the time. Once we get one overcoming, you know, a whole thing and getting healed up and everything like that, then there's another thing that God opens up. Okay, good job. You got through that one. Okay, now we're going to gently go into this one.
Right.
It's literally the class that I'm taking right now, Blueprint for Permanent Change at Restoration Night. There's a lot to do about that so that you understand where you are in the mountain process is the best way I can explain it simply.
Yeah.
There's one called the Dark Night of the Soul. You can imagine how that feels.
The Dark Night
of the Soul. The Dark Night of the Soul.
Oof.
Yeah. That's still, though, it's the really hard part before things start to get better.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we're always on, at least for me, I'm always on that roller coaster. You know, or as I like to call it, the bipolar coaster.
Yeah.
Now, where things are, you know, things can feel really super great, and then all of a sudden you're dragging, feeling lower than whale poop on the bottom of the ocean.
I think there's different areas in my life that, like, things are decent, things are really good, things are pretty darn hard, and then, like, you know what I mean? It's just like
crash and burn.
Well, and I feel like that works out okay for me. That different levels of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yeah,
got well, some wins in some areas.
I think we've learned a few things today. One of which is, whatever your grief looks like, embrace it. If you're unsure how to deal with it, reach out. Absolutely. I know a place where there's people who are really good listeners, too.
Me, too.
I think it's called, what's it called? Leyte Recovery Center.
Go figure.
531 South Main Street in Moscow, 208-883-1045. You can always give them a call. There's always some fantastic person on staff or a volunteer or a peer that can help you, or maybe even a recovery coach.
Imagine that. And we're open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Yep.
When you can catch a meeting here too, there's the noon AA and the 7 p.m. NA, and there's a men's meeting on Mondays at 5:30. Yeah. I hear that one's pretty good.
It's running okay.
I mean, I've heard some good things about it. I haven't been there, but no, I've heard from other men.
Allowed.
I don't want to go to your men's meeting. You guys might talk about silly things. I don't know.
No, just kind of farting and scratching.
That's what I was going to say, farting and things like that. I do my own at home. I don't need to hear about your guys's.
You don't need to get involved. Yeah, and if the wheels really come off, there's the Rural Crisis Center Network too.
Yep.
You can always hit them up. And then there's the 988 suicide prevention hotline. And you said you can text.
Yeah, you
as
can
as well.
You can call 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Or you can also text 988 as
right.
well. Same kind of thing. And then you can talk text with somebody.
Talk text.
Yep. And so just real quick, the recovery center here, if you call in the number and you need to talk with somebody, we can meet you down here in like 20 to 30 minutes, bring a counselor, figure out what's going on, let you be here until... you know, you're in a better state of things. And then also there's resources that we keep people connected with if needed. And
right.
It's a whole good experience of a thing. Unfortunately, I know when people come in, it doesn't feel like a good experience as they're coming in. But we do try to walk alongside people well and listen well and see what they need.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you do a darn good job.
Yeah.
You know what? We're up against the clock. So thanks, Denise, for sharing your thoughts on grief and everything else we covered today. I think it was a pretty broad spectrum. And I'm going to close it out with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health, you do. What it takes.
make mistakes.